In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
Welcome to a night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh, the dead whose haunted souls hunt the living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures.
Welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm Smoking Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
Today, we're going to be talking about all things zombies. Brains and undead and all that good stuff.
Sweet blood and guts. We even got a special guest this episode. What? How did we secure this?
We'll get to that, but first, I'll tell you what we're smoking this week so you can smoke along at home.
No, you can't because it's so limited you won't get your hands on it.
It is the Tatawahe Monster No. 7 Jekyll. Super limited edition. They only do 666 boxes every year.
Because it's the number of the beast?
Yes. They distribute them to unlucky 13 stores, which, lucky enough, our local cigar shop was one of the 13, so we were able to pick up one. It is a Nicaraguan blend filler with a Sancti Spiritus wrapper. Sounds like something the
Boondock Saints shit right there, yeah. And I like it. I feel like I should say a little prayer and...
Yeah, it's a Churchill size, 7x49, about a $15 smoke, so we'll let you know how we like it at the end of the episode. So let's introduce our zombie expert for this episode, top secret, The Stump. How you doing, sir?
What's going on, Podcast Nation?
Yeah, so we couldn't secure an actual Groot, so we got a Stump.
So tell little people, like, what makes you our zombie expert this week?
Well, watched a lot of zombie movies growing up. Of course, big fan of The Walking Dead. Been down to the set a couple of times. Served 6 years with 75th Ranger Regiment, 3rd Ranger Battalion, Fort Benning, Georgia. Served another 7 additional years in the Georgia Army National Guard. Other than that, I like guns, crossbows, and arrows.
And as nerds, we like friends that like guns, crossbows, and arrows.
Yeah, we usually protect you guys.
It's like Woody Harrelson in Zombieland. God bless rednecks. God bless rednecks. So let's kick it off, you know, where did this zombie, you know, movies, TV shows, all that stuff begin?
I mean, I'm going to say back in roughly 1932 with the movie White Zombie and Bela Lugosi, you know, really getting back to some of the Haitian voodoo magic.
Yeah, directed by Victor Halpin, yeah, like you said, back in 1932. That's like the first zombie movie, and about the same time was like the first really Western fictional novel, Magic Island by William Seabrook. And that's one thing back then, you know, zombies weren't the, you know, zombies we have today.
No, and actually William's book actually introduced the word zombie into the U.S. dictionary.
Zombie, that sounds like a bisexual zombie.
I mean, could be. I mean, hell.
Zombie from Zimbabwe.
I did get an opportunity to check out Chamber of Horrors over the weekend.
From Zimbabwe. How'd you like that one?
I mean, robotic zombie strippers? Hey, I'll give it.
Yes, that's a big plus.
Did you say robotic zombie strippers?
Yes, I did. You heard me correctly.
It's the only adult-themed haunted house in Atlanta. It's down at the Masquerade. It is quite interesting.
So is it better than Zombie Apocalypse?
I mean, it's more, on more some next-level stuff.
More strippers.
Yep.
Anything with strippers and zombies has got to be good.
Yep. And like we're saying, back in, like I said, those original days, it was all about zombies were, you know, the slaves of voodoo magic. You know, they weren't necessarily the undead. They were, you know, some kind of voodoo priest put a curse on somebody, and now they're, you know, zombified and doing their bidding.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, you know, that's really White Zombie is the one that really stands out. You know, then you start getting to some of the newer zombie versions.
Well, the first zombie in comics, since we talk some comics here, Solomon Grundy, 1944.
Way one back of, then?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, one was, of, and he even again before was my a, time. One of the voodoo zombies, you know, one of, you know, Batman's and, you know, DC Universe. Basically, it was a DC Universe's version of Hulk. You know, that's, you know, pretty much who Solomon Grundy was. Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday.
And you just had to do that since today is Monday, right?
I mean, I didn't even think about that, but that's the one thing he always said in the comics. I was like, you know, there's different versions where he's like smart kind of zombies, or he's just kind of like, you know, dumb like the Hulk. But yeah, that's his thing. He always says Solomon.
Eventually, we're going to have to secure a GoPro. That way we can start setting up little banners and stuff to say, I meant to do that.
Exactly. When we want to maintain the illusion that we know what we're doing.
I think the gig's already up.
Good
it's
luck
been
with
up.
That.
Yeah. From the moment people walked in and they started getting attacked by pit bulls on podcasts and stuff, I mean, it's
never
like.
Never happened to me before. Yeah. Probably won't happen since.
I don't know. That pit bull has snuck in here on us a time or two. But do you know what the. Well, you know, the moving on to like the modern era, the ones, the zombies that we pretty much all know and love now, the undead,
cute
walking
little
dead,
flesh eaters. They're so cuddly.
The shambling. Rotting flesh meats. That all started 1968 with George A. Romero.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead.
Night of the Living Dead.
I mean, I just had to give that a moment of silence. I mean, that movie set the stage for all things that, you know, typically a lot of your movies, even the parodies and everything else that come out, I mean, they're all going back to those roots.
Really the first, modern, the way we see zombies now, that's where it started, was George A. Romero. And
yeah, well, and actually, you know what? I mean,
and even
listen
today
to some
is
of my
based
documentary
on those,
stuff
those
with
rules and stuff that he established in that first first movie.
Yeah, and you know, even George A. Romero and seeing him in some of the documentaries and things that I've watched, Richard Matheson's 1954 novel I Am Legend actually, you know, was kind of a segue into Night of the Living Dead.
I'm over here kicking myself in the fucking teeth because I forgot about I Am Legend, the worst movie Will Smith ever did.
Dude, what are you talking about, man? The dog scene is just like, holy crap. I would have been fine with all the humans dying off. Why do you got to kill the dog?
I know. I was sitting there going, dude, just do something else. Put the dog somewhere else.
No, when he starts going crazy and like, you know, trying to pick up the mannequin chick in the bookstore.
Now, when you get into that type of stuff, it's the dynamics of how the human mind breaks down.
Yeah, well, you get isolated. You know, your brain, you know, try to protect you by, you know, trying to invent stuff. You're not alone with your own
thoughts.
I
mean, the human brain and all of its psyche and everything else is programmed to recognize face and feelings. And, you know, I'm sure some of your past life and everything else can probably shed some additional insight on that.
Well,
I mean, who hasn't walked through a wall and said, I would bang that mannequin?
We're taught to protect the brain with barriers. And I don't know if you ever heard the expression, flip the switch. There's a way that you can disconnect with reality and do the things that you need to do and still come back to reality. And it's talked about in some extent on The Walking Dead and in other things. But there is a way to disconnect yourself from what's going on around you to focus on what you need to do. And then come back to yourself.
Yeah, with that said, let's just go ahead and jump into it. We're recording this the day after the return of The Walking Dead. So let's talk a little bit about The Walking Dead.
Dude, I got to say, man, you know, I was a little bit afraid that this season's premiere would have been a little hyped up. But, you know, it lived to all the expectations. So, you know, I got to say rock and roll.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and like say
blood, guts, and glory.
Spoiler alert, just in case, because we'll probably get excited and accidentally say something.
Oh, yes, we will discuss
this. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe they killed Daryl. Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we rioted. I mean, it was a
fuck
small
it, we
riot,
rioted.
But we did.
I so wanted to tweet that last night when I was watching to see how many people like freaked the fuck out.
Holy
it was like,
fuck, dude.
What?
And you heard it first here on the Cigar Nerds.
No doubt. But no, like, that whole opening scene, I was thinking, okay, I'm catching this. But then when they got to the trough, and I went, no fucking way.
Yeah
they're all like,
you're not going to do that. And homeboy, kang! I said, oh!
Yeah, that's what I say.
I didn't even hear four. I
didn't know. There was no four.
Yeah, we'll get into some like zombie survival tips later, but I want to say in the apocalypse, You see some people eating steak and you don't see a cow around,
y'all get
do
the
not
fuck out.
Trust those people.
Beat feet, DD Mile, unass the AO, move the fuck out.
That steak has a first name and it's probably Bob. It's not Oscar Mayer.
Shit, not Bob.
Bob?
And I don't know what kind of steak you're getting from Oscar Mayer, man.
No fucking doubt.
I need you to step Bologna your game steak. Up just a little bit.
Yeah. Angus then, all right? My steak has a first name named Angus.
There you go.
Black Angus. Which that should have been Samuel Jackson's name in that movie where he was like the Scottish, black Scottish guy.
What movie was that?
Formula 51.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Didn't that have Keanu Reeves in it?
No.
No, that was another movie.
Oh, I don't even figure out what that movie is now.
Holy shit, speaking of Keanu Reeves, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 3 is coming.
Yes. We'll get some zombies in that. Not yeah, like you said, the flipping the switch, you've seen that out of Rick a bunch of times where he's just
oh,
been
fuck
like,
yeah. That
yeah, I mean, you've seen him completely
when
wig
he
out.
Fucking went into farmer mode, I was like, oh shit, this dude's lost his shit. He ain't coming back. But then towards the end of that season, you see him kind of, okay, now like, I got to deal with this motherfucker.
Yeah,
and,
before he went farmer mode, he got to that point where he was like, almost
damn it, we said
bad.
No spoilers,
yeah,
Joe.
He was too bad. We're talking last season, so if you haven't seen last season, fuck you.
So, do you guys remember...
I was talking about
back
Zombie Rick.
When they were at Herschel's Zombie farm, nice. And Shane was like, you got to deal with this. You got to take this shit head on and move with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, spoiler alert, but Andrew Lincoln, the actor that plays Rick Grimes, he said in an interview, he said, Shane was right.
Oh, yeah.
So... I mean, heads up to the pro-militant motherfuckers.
Yeah, to like, yeah, survive in that environment, you've got to like, yeah, make some choices that you
should. Yeah, no, I mean...
The rules of society
once,
are gone
once society's
at that point.
Rules break down and the fabrics start unweaving, it's time at that point that, hey, you got to recognize yourself, because ain't nobody going to recognize you for you.
I don't know if I'd, build a cannibal camp, but still, you definitely got to like, fuck everybody else. It's about like protecting your own and stuff at that point.
That's the thing.
I mean, you just slap an Oscar Mayer label on it, dude. And I mean, it's all the same.
Enough Tabasco make anything edible.
This is true. I learned that in the military.
And none of those hot ass jalapenos that we had the other night. Stay away from those bitches.
Oh, yeah. That was like the worst case of nachos we had.
If I drop the F bomb or the MF bomb too much, just reel me in.
You know what we'll do? We'll put it on the explicit tag. So, motherfucking right.
No NC-17. Rating on this.
Yeah, and like I said, it was cool with Rick is, like I said, he got almost where he was too violent, and he tried to, like, dial it back and get to, like, farmer mode. And then, after the prison went to shit, he kind of got back to that, but he found that, like, medium where he's like, I'm not total beast mode, there is a, but I'll do what I have to do. Like, when he... ripped that guy's throat out last season.
That was
well, I mean,
bad.
I think what you're seeing there is a progression.
And he's like,
as,
I'm all
right. Society breaks down. I mean, people give Rick a lot of shit in some of the forums and everything else about not truly being a leader. But, I mean, the way he's progressed and everything else, I mean, yeah, he's made some fucked up calls. But I don't think any of us can say we've lived perfect lives and haven't had to make some things that we probably look back on and say, shit, well, maybe I should have did that a little bit differently, but hindsight's always 20/20, so, I say don't judge so you've walked a mile in another man's shoes.
My biggest thing about how that whole progression worked for him was where he started and on day one, season one, and where he's progressed to now, and seeing the evolution of where he's ebbed and flowed in his consciousness of violence, if you want to put it that way. He's right where he needs to be now.
Yeah. No, I think he's
fully adjusted. He has the monitors, quote unquote, around him with Glenn and, maybe even Daryl to a certain extent.
See, that's one of the things I'm curious about once, I mean, we've seen a lot of the extras get killed off and everything, but inevitably, what happens when some of these, main characters start going? Then what truly happens to the fabric and, the community sense that they've tried to establish?
Yeah, because the people that's with him is the ones that, like, really put the brakes on him and keep him from going, like, batshit. If he was on his own...
I mean,
you're
almost saying that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing where...
Sorry. Look at the way Herschel and his whole, you got to have a job around here and you're going to do it. That is a psychological way of making sure that everyone is preoccupied doing something that they need to be doing and keeping their mind off of what else is going on around them, like Rick's failure to deal with Lori's death and processing all that information. It's a mechanism. It's a safety mechanism in the brain, is what it is. I've seen guys go through it. So,
I like the thing they've been doing too lately with showing the. It kind of started with like the second half of last season, showing the story from different perspectives. Like there's like four or five stories going on at once, and you're seeing like how different people are doing different. Yeah, I mean shit
you're
at
seeing
the
same scene for four different angles. Yeah. Yeah. And you know it truly helps you gain an appreciation as to exactly what's going on through each character's mind and their own progression. You know, and I think that's one of the things that's really helped Walking Dead become such a success is the way they're able to. You know, there's the blood, the guts, the, you know, true zombie survival aspect of things. But then again, you're starting to, you know, see some of the really fucked up, you know.
Parts of humanity.
Yeah, absolutely come out that, the, you know, people just, oh, no, you know, people are naturally good, blah, blah, blah. No, people are naturally shit.
Most people are.
That's the thing I like about The Walking Dead is, like, the it's the humans that are the monsters, and I mean it's the,
absolutely
the survivors are way more scary than the zombies.
And that's how it's going to be when society breaks down. You will see people come
unravel. Hold on. I mean, we're talking about Walking Dead zombies. Later on, I want to talk about some hardcore next level shit. We'll start talking about some rabid zombies, and at that point, I don't want no part of the zombie apocalypse.
Like, if you go back to what you just said, the rabid zombies. Look at the infection that happened in season 4. Where yeah. they all got sick. That shit, if society breaks down, like, say, I hate to quote another show on this show, but Revolution. Yeah. How if society broke down like that, you would see rampant outbreak of things that we have not seen in hundreds of years.
I'm almost wondering, you know, current events with some of this Ebola shit going around and stuff, is this not really a test to see how naive and arrogant all the governments and the people are that, oh yeah, this can't happen. Well, guess what?
It's fucking
on the shore. It's happening.
I knew when they brought those two people into Atlanta, from the people that worked for the CDC, yeah. I knew it was coming then. I'm not going to name her name for sake of because I know her, but there is a lady that I drive her son to school, and she works for the CDC. And I refuse to have any type of conversation with her about anything that has to go on.
Well, no. I mean, I'm waiting on... I mean, you've already started seeing it. Hasn't made major outlooks and stuff. But, I mean, you've got high-trained nurses that are supposedly qualified and stuff getting infected with this shit. I'd be very surprised in the next coming weeks if we don't learn this shit's already mutated and it's airborne.
Airborne?
Well, let me put it to you this way.
Airborne's what I'm doing with
the
cigar
heard,
right
and
now.
I don't know this for a statistical fact. But I heard that if it was to outbreak and it was to go unchecked and uncontrolled because we couldn't keep up with the mutation of the virus itself, that only 10 to 15% of the population in the U.S. would be genetically immune to it.
I mean, have you seen that movie? We're kind of off topic on zombies, but viruses are the same. The Last Ship. Did you watch any of that this season?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's pretty cool. It's got that... one of the guys from Firefly, Adam Baldwin.
Okay.
And basically they were on a far-off mission in the Arctic trying to find a strain
ship.
Of this.
Okay, yeah.
And they didn't know, this big outbreak wiped out most of the world while they were on a mission. And now they've come back into this, post-apocalyptic world trying to find a cure for this weird disease.
Well, staying...
I'm just about to go straight up Jules Verne on some shit and take a hot air balloon and I'm staying above the atmosphere. See how long that lasts.
Well, think about this. Think about, and let's go into World War Z. Okay. Kind of a shitty-ass movie. Not too bad, not too good.
I don't like CG zombie movies.
Well, it's in my list, simply because the plot and the way the theme of the movie worked out was fascinating to me. Because it shows how different cultures in the world react to the same thing that you're going through.
Yeah.
Like Israel. They built...
Oh, yeah.
They knew that
shit
was there.
On lockdown
and they said, fuck it. We're going to build a goddamn wall, and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
And they kept... That's how they controlled it.
And that's what they did. They made the whole zombie apocalypse look plausible because it was based in, a virus.
Okay. Well, that's what it will be, probably, if it actually ever came to fruition.
They're not really reanimated corpses. They're... you know,
I mean, they sick died. Straight up, you know, I mean,
they died with a virus that makes them
and
have
we,
motor.
I mean, pretty I would say that. Well,
there's
I mean, looking
examples
at
examples of this in the animal and insect.
Well,
kingdom.
I mean, look at rabies. All right, you take rabies, and what
just,
is
not just rabies? I can't remember the name of it, but there's a one. It's like a bacteria fungal thing that will infect ants and then take over their mind and control them to climb up to a high point on a leaf, lock onto it, and then it sprouts its spores, and that's the perfect location to spread the disease. I mean, it actually controls their bodies. If that jumped to like a human or something, and there's another one too.
He's on some
Joe,
next
better,
level shit.
You better find a pretty big leaf, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, there's another one too that's.
And I don't want to hear you sprouting spores. Shit. All right, that's a whole nother movie.
Affects rats and makes them not afraid of cats, so they will get eaten more and spread the disease to felines. So,
well, it's all genetic mutations of the same thing.
I mean, we've already had diseases like that jump the species barrier, like swine flu, bird flu, and shit, you know, started affecting humans.
What was that movie a while back, and everybody was dying, and it came from H1N1? Fuck, I can't remember the name of that movie. Somebody Google that shit.
We don't have no Googles on the podcast.
Oh, shit.
You're the one with the laptop open.
All right, check it out. I have... like this crazy thought of how can we get The Rock to do a fucking cameo on The Walking Dead? Would that not be completely badass?
You know, I gotta give that guy
zombie Rock. He's yeah. like, that motherfucker looks really good.
It's the fucking Rock. Oh shit, I gotta take his head off.
That's like, remember the remake of Dawn of the Dead? When they're, like, pointing out celebrity zombies.
Yeah, that shit was funny.
Well, no, I mean, that almost kind of reminds me, and we'll cover this as one of my other tops, but Shaun of the Dead, right? Bill Murray's cameo that made the movie for me.
No, that was Zombieland.
That was Zombieland.
Zombieland, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Since you brought it up,
let's jump on to the... Rolling Stone made a list of the top 10 zombie movies. And
shit, I was supposed to use Rolling Stone? Fuck.
I use my own memory.
I'm pretty sure they're all... All right, well, let's start with number 10, which is 2009 Zombieland.
All right.
Ruben Fleischer film starring Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, and my girl I
don't want to stink it. Oh, I want a Twinkie.
I just want a fucking Twinkie, man. I mean, what? Apocalypse
Goddamn
happens?
Goddamn snowballs.
I mean, what's funny is, like, after that, we actually had that almost, you know, lost the Twinkie factory. And, like, we all knew how Woody felt. We're like, damn it, we want a Twinkie.
Hostess,
like, I've never
back.
Eaten Twinkies until we couldn't have them. And then I was like, fuck, I want a Twinkie.
Yeah, and then, so, you know, a prime example of that is we go into Kroger one night, and there's a freaking make-your-own Twinkie kit, right? So it's got the little Twinkie oven, all the little mixes.
We almost bought one.
And we pass it up. Like,
you're kidding,
oh,
right?
Well, we can just buy these off the shelves and don't even have to make them anymore.
You're kidding, right?
No, it came with, like, a mix
it's
and everything.
It's a real thing.
Bands, this whole thing where you can make your own.
I wouldn't even toy with the nation that way.
Oh, my God.
We were almost drunk enough that it was a good idea, but we
Pod Nation, go out now and find your own Build a Twinkie kit in the stores now, motherfucker.
1995.
Oh, fuck.
Zombieland was the top grossing zombie film of all time until World War Z.
What?
Yep. $60.8 million.
See, you guys did all the statistics. I just wrote down a list of what I thought.
I mean, I just, yeah, I mean, I basically referenced.
Shit, this motherfucker's over here doing. Fucking class 3 research.
Well, I mean, that's what we do, man. We're
I have no life.
We're professionals in
y'all
this
all got
shit,
girlfriends and married and stuff. I got nothing to do but do research for this podcast. I have no life.
Yeah,
we
and I mean,
shoot
I
guns more often.
And I don't know, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, to tribute to Zombieland's success, instead of it being all blood and gore and everything else, I mean,
there was a
it really stood
that,
its
yeah.
way out in, you know, the so-called Zomcom.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
know.
That was like the first.
Did you just actually
air
coin
quote?
That phrase?
Fuck yeah.
You nah, coined that phrase or was it already there?
Nah, that was some Google shit.
It was already there, but you know what?
Zomcom. Fuck, man. You need to trademark that if it's not trademarked.
Yeah, I mean, Zombieland was like probably the biggest, you know, zombie comedy at this point. But you know,
no, I got the biggest one coming up. You guys don't even know. Just
zombie comedy really started
about
with,
to drop bombs on this shit
in the '80s. With
know, I got one man.
Y'all remember
one.
Return of the Living Dead?
Yes,
the comedy version of Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah,
and that one also introduced a lot of stuff that still affects movies now.
So I guess we're not even going to get into the adult parodies then.
We'll get there. But right now we're talking about the top 10 list. But, yeah.
Ron Jeremy and Fuck of the Living Dead.
The Return of the Living Dead, that's where we get the thing that zombies eat brains. You know, in the original movies, they just ate general flesh in general, but that's where we get the whole brains. Is from
that
Return
was from
of
the like
Living
the
Dead.
80s,
yeah, well, actually,
yeah, 85 you know, was the first one, and they had like 3 or 4 sequels.
Yeah.
All right, so I got one on the list, Dead Snow.
That actually is number 9, so you are
holy
correct, sir.
Fucking shit. Have you seen it?
I've seen pieces. I haven't seen through the whole thing.
That shit was fucking crazy.
But I know Nazi zombies in the snow.
No doubt.
I only remember one scene where like a hand comes up out of the snow and grabs a guy by the crotch.
Oh, shit.
You've not lived. You've seen blood splatter on snow. It's just
no doubt.
You don't want the zombie reach around. It's not
no,
gonna go
I do
well.
Not want the zombie. Whoa! Wait a minute.
That reminds me. I think it's Return of the Living Dead 2, where a zombie jumps on their car and they roll up the window and it cuts its hands off.
Cuts its hands. Yeah.
And he grabs the guy's nuts and he's fighting, trying to get this zombie hand out of his crotch and finally throws it out the window and it lands and gives him the finger.
I remember that. Oh shit! What about I can't think of the name of the damn movie.
It was so awesome that we got a finger twitch.
Yeah, a finger twitch.
I mean, you just saw
the 28 Days Later.
Yeah, we're getting to that. That one's on the list. Next after Dead Snow was Planet Terror, Robert Rodriguez in 2007.
Man.
Dude, you know what? I still love me some Grindhouse films.
Grindhouse
I mean,
was okay.
Well, that, I mean you know, not only for the theatrical.
Without Grindhouse, we wouldn't have got Machete.
Well, not only that, but, I mean, come on now. I mean, you've got Rose McGowan with a machine gun leg and everything.
Yes,
dude, come
machine
on.
Gun leg riding West Coast
riding
choppers.
West Coast choppers.
And Robert Rodriguez said, he had plans for this movie back when he did The Faculty.
Faculty, yeah.
Because he was like, I know, like, we haven't had zombies movies in a while. This stuff's fixing to blow up hard. I want to be the first one in there. And it was like, started writing it, and then it just kind of didn't happen until, you know, the Grindhouse came around. He's like, damn it, I wasn't the first, but, you know, I still got to drop my... And that one had a lot of throwbacks to Return of the Living Dead,
Return of the
Living
Dead, yeah.
Because, you know, that was the cause of the apocalypse in those movies was, like, always a military experiment gone wrong or
well, how else do you think we're going to fuck the world up? Military's got to do it. Lowest fucking common denominator.
And that's why the apocalypse starts in Atlanta and in The Walking Dead is because, you know, something leaks the CDC, man.
It did not start in Atlanta.
Well, that's, like, the first, you know, issue and stuff. That's, you know, where Rick goes to. We never really see where it...
Well, if
starts.
You remember, Dr. Connors or whatever that dude's name was at the CDC said that it, like the first, like he was trying to contact, was it Europe or France or someplace over
yeah, it
in
was
Europe?
Somewhere overseas.
And that I almost want to say he said that might have been where it came from, but
I can't remember. It's been
I, yeah.
That's one thing I liked remember. About The Walking Dead too, is because in a lot of these movies they're like, oh, the zombies have started. All of a sudden we have no power or nothing. And
you're talking about the explosion of the whole like post-apocalyptic world.
Well, no, that's my kind of beef with zombie movies. The ones that start like pick up like early in the apocalypse. All of a sudden, we have no water, power, nothing else. Most of that stuff's automated. It would
yeah,
go
it's
a while
automated. It would go. It
would
go months
apart.
Without. Yeah.
And with
I
The Walking Dead, you know, we missed that start off point. We started in the middle of the apocalypse because Rick wakes up from his coma and everything's already gone to shit.
I think
so. We don't have to explain that whole thing's breaking
down.
Well,
I don't know. You know, I watched Talking Dead. You know, after the premiere and everything, and you heard. You know, Greg and the executive producer there speaking, and you know, I think this season we're going to get a lot of those throwbacks and start
yeah,
getting
like
filled
a lot
in
of
some
of
that back
flashes.
Information. Yeah,
yeah.
Because if you, I don't know if you saw the premiere, like where they were at, where they were doing the premiere on the red carpet. Rick was clean shaven.
Oh. Yeah, I watched the first episode about Instagram.
I mean, dude, if I'm on
Dead
a red
yet,
carpet,
it's
best believe
my,
I'm
no,
going to
no,
be
no,
so
no,
fresh
no.
and so clean.
Like he was clean shaven, like. Either A, he's off the show because he got killed, or B, they had to go back and film something where it
yeah,
was
like
an afterthought.
Well, that they film like during the summer and stuff, so it's like
so
you
he
know,
probably
he's
wasn't working
back.
With the
when
undercover drag task force or
you know
anything.
How long it takes to grow a beard,
dude? Straight up Irish man. I mean,
he
just give me
morning.
A Guinness.
He already has a beard.
Holy
fuck yeah.
Shit!
I've seen his family. His uncle's got an impressive beard.
Yeah. My family? Or, no. Oh, my uncle's got an impressive beard.
He's got one of those like beards that comes down to your knees.
My uncle's got a ZZ Top beard, that's for sure.
I think this one was straight born out of some mountain moonshine, though. So,
yeah. Next on the list after Planet Terror, number 7 is Dead Alive.
Dead
who made that
I
one?
I missed that one.
Yeah, see, I'm
Peter
not too
Jackson.
From...
Like Peter Jackson Lord of the
made
Rings,
that? Hobbit Lord of the Rings made that shit?
Made that back in 92.
And hold on. So are we going to dub these walkers? Because, I mean, you look at every other movie, what are we doing? We're going on some kind of epic adventure. So, you know, here we are. We're walking.
The Hobbits were zombies.
You know, and unfortunately... Unfortunately, you know, I mean, you talk about Peter Jackson and everything. You know what happens in my head? I immediately revert back to the scene of Clerks 2 where they're in movies. And it's like, I'll give you a rundown of Peter Jackson's films right here, 30 seconds.
And we're walking.
And we're walking.
Three movies of Peter fucking walking. But yeah, that was the thing in that one, too, was you know, talking about animals and stuff. Their zombie apocalypse started when, like, the guy's mom got bit by a monkey at the zoo. And literally went ape shit crazy.
Again, viral.
Yep. And I think there's like an awesome scene where he goes to killing zombies with a lawnmower too. That's the only thing.
He holds the lawnmower up and he's like, blah, 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 blah.
Dude, my lawnmower, I'm going to have to start working out.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to freaking do bicep curls and chest presses and be like The Rock and be like, all right, I can hold this for 30 seconds.
Come at me, bro.
Come get it,
bro. No, no. See, I got the ultimate zombie.
Oh, his laser-sided fork, ladies and gentlemen.
Start gouging the brains.
What in the hell is that?
That's his tactical chef's apron.
Nice well, after, kit for your...
Yeah, next up is the modern zombie comedy, Shaun of the Dead.
That was a chair, folks, not
no,
my ass.
No, it was not.
Oops. That might have been my ass.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead like came out in 2004. Yeah, Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost. That was an awesome... Would you quit that?
God damn.
That was an awesome movie.
No, it, Shaun of
it,
the Dead,
it
yeah.
had its It had its good points and bad points. I like the theme and the plot of the movie, but some of the acting...
I mean, it was just neat to see it, you know, everything hailing from England. So, you know, I mean, you don't get too many British zombies.
Well, 28 Days Later is...
Yeah,
that starts in England.
And I like how at first he didn't really he's such he a really, you know, he doesn't even notice there's a zombie apocalypse. He just thinks it's some drunk guy.
Well, I mean,
he's so in his routine, he misses like the first couple zombies and just like bebopping about his day.
I mean, it's one of those things that was, I guess, one of the greatest plays on human culture and psyche. I mean, all it was is depicting how we get so wrapped up in our
everyday
day to day that. Hell, we could be walking through fucking tunnels. We don't even see what's going on at a 360-degree angle,
like,
around
you know,
us.
It's basically a relationship movie about him trying to get his girlfriend back, but there just happens to be zombies. And you know, it proves to have a successful relationship, you have to kill off your in-laws and your best friend. You got to get rid of everybody before you can have that relationship. It's pretty much everyone died except him and his girlfriend. That's the only way you can have a successful relationship is to get rid of everybody. That's why I'm still single, folks.
Anyway, moving on.
Next up was 28 Days Later, 2002, which I say that one's kind of important because
I look at this one and I say, oh shit, PETA's going to set off the next zombie plague.
Well, that one was cool because it was like the first, the fast-moving zombies. They kind of tried to move away from Romero's style, and it really wasn't the undead. It was like a rage virus. You know, people... Just kind of got
people got pissed
that
off.
That shit crazy.
Fucking started killing people.
And I say fast zombies. I mean, I love the classic zombie, but freaking fast zombies are just
no.
Scary.
I scare the piss out of me. At that point, I need something with lots of ammo and a rapid fire rate.
No, you need to get the fuck out of Dodge. Is what you need to do. You need to get as far away from.
I hope I'm never in Kansas. I've already seen what happens to that city in tornadoes.
Holy shit!
Don't go to Canada.
Yeah, no.
Canada, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, they'll turn you into a walrus up there.
Can I be a walrus zombie? Now imagine that shit.
See, walrus. I like the whole
zombie tusk. That, we're onto something, Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith, what a great fucking dude.
Have you seen Tusk yet?
No, I have not.
Oh, dude, it's like a human centipede, but with a walrus.
Holy fuck!
Yeah, a podcaster goes to Canada to interview a weird guy and gets turned into a walrus.
So if we ever invite you to go to Canada, you should probably just say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never go full walrus. As long as he's not bringing steak, we're good.
We might be all right, Oscar just as long Meyer as it doesn't steak. Say Oscar Mayer
Oscar
on the
Meyer's
label.
Steak. Dude, you ever... Someone in Podcast Nation find me an Oscar Mayer steak. Bring it here pronto.
It's a T-bone-shaped piece of bologna.
And on that note, we're going to have to take a 10-minute laughing break.
Oh, I'm so gonna make that.
So we can't even keep a straight face on this episode. So you know we're having a good time. Oh, yeah. You know the viewers are gonna man if they're, you know, person like.
I wish that was an Oscar Mayer steak.
Oh. And he can carry a tune, folks.
And the, you know, 28 weeks later, too, you know, kind of jumped to that, you know.
Wait, wasn't that the one with Sandra Bullock, like she was some alcoholic or some shit? Oh, no, that, wrong movie.
that's the rehab movie. Oh. But yeah, 28 weeks later was the sequel of
the I mean, she's trying to rehab later. From the zombie plague. I mean, it'll
I don't
be
think
okay.
You can come back from that shit.
Jumps from the, you know, early stages of the zombie apocalypse to the later stages and. See how people are still
there's
trying to.
There's so many freaking zombie movies and references and everything else. If you tried to do a zombie marathon,
holy fuck! Dude,
how much
that
of
would take?
Your years of life would be taken away if
It'd
you tried?
It'd be like the episode, all the episodes of The Simpsons
I mean,
times 10
games. I mean,
every zombie, everything
every
ever
game has a zombie in it. Yeah.
This is true.
Even your first person. I mean, well, let's go
first
old school.
Shooters.
Doom.
Doom.
Yes, like the original Doom. Freaking zombies. Yep. And even that, Doom 3, like on the Xbox.
Dude, that game
was
creepy as shit.
That green, yeah,
well, I think the thing that made
creepy.
That game so creepy is not only being so dark, but having to multitask between,
yeah,
well, do I want to see or do I want to shoot
at the same time?
But I can't do both.
My biggest thing
zombies
about
made no sound, so you'd be like, yeah. Oh crap, zombies. Where's my gun? Where's my gun?
7.1, I think my girlfriend's whispering in my ear. No, it's that fucking zombie behind me about to kill me all.
That did happen to my buddy Pete himself playing that game. Because he's.
It wasn't me, motherfucker.
No, it was Mike. He was playing it like middle of the night.
Mike Shelton?
Yes. In front of the big screen, playing that creepy ass Doom 3, and one of his roommate's kids woke up and got like right next to his face and he didn't notice it because he's so into the game. The kid's like, "What are you doing?" Screamed like a little girl, like threw his controller across the room. Well, had a heart attack.
I remember I went and stood in line to get
Doom, Resident Evil.
Resident Evil.
Yeah.
The original one for PS2.
Yeah.
I stood in line with Eddie, my friend Eddie, at night. They were doing a midnight release. And we were in line from like 7:30 to like 3 o'clock in the morning trying to get that fucking game. And then we went home and we hooked it up to a projector. I don't know how he worked that shit out. He was a genius with that shit. He was like MacGyver for the low-tech dudes. And we were playing that shit on a sheet. And the first time a dog jumped through the fucking window, I went through the fucking window.
Well, they got that. There's a new game by the same like original
Capcom or whoever it was.
The actual guy who wrote the original RE game. It's called Evil Within. That's supposed to like be a throwback.
Oh, yeah.
That I haven't
yeah,
seen.
See,
it
there's
yet,
so many new games out there that I mean, I think I'm just going to be forced to buy a next gen system. I mean, you know, The Last of Us, and you know, some of the newer games that come out that I haven't even. You know, I'm sorry. I'm still freaking rocking Resident Evil 2, you know, a lot of the time.
Well, some people
and,
you know, credit you know, the first couple of Resident Evil games as starting this big,
starting the big
zombie resurgence. Because that was in, what,
Damn
96,
Raccoon
97?
Late 95,
and then early
2000s
when we started getting, like, the onslaught of zombie movies races up. Like, you know, the people that grew up playing Resident Evil was like,
fuck it, I'm
going to
write a movie about this shit.
Yeah. And even the Resident Evil movies were great, all too.
Right, so where are we at on our list? Or did the list go by the wayside?
No, we're on 5. Now we're at 4. 1985's Reanimator.
Holy
movie
shit,
version
dude.
Of an H.P. Lovecraft novel.
That was that an animated version?
No, it was a live-action version. Starring
Hubert.
I don't know, that's the character's name is Hubert West. It was directed
by
Stuart. Yeah,
Reanimator, man. That had some crazy scenes. I mean, you don't see too many.
Was that the one where the dude fucking was eating the legs and shit?
Well,
I don't remember. But he's like basically
the scene that stands out in front of me, and I don't remember the actress's name.
He starts like trying to bring body parts to life, and then eventually moves up to a full-blown body.
All right.
And that's when stuff goes bad.
Folks, we're going
to
go a little NC-17 here. So if you got kids, earmuffs. You know, one of the parts that really stands out to me in that movie is... He's got the zombie head right there at the girl's crotch, and she's butt-ass naked, laying on the table and everything. And, you know, that's just like, holy shit, you know, that's almost Rape Tree.
Throwback to our Evil Dead. Yeah. It's been so long since I've seen that. But, yeah, that's, like, so we're a big, you know, Lovecraft fans, you know, a little steampunk action. But, yeah, that...
Steampunk. I still don't know what that term means. You'll have to explain it.
We got a little segment
we'll
go into
later.
We'll teach you all about Jules Verne and shit.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
Umbrellas, blimps, and shit.
Yeah. That's all you need to know.
But after Reanimator, number 3, the Dawn of the Dead remake from 2004.
Absolutely.
That was another, like, of the first of the, you know,
that was the one that kind of started it really catching ground.
I mean, people surviving in a mall, and that too, and it showed, like, the progression of time. It wasn't just, like, you know, a single night. You know, they were there for, you know, months and months.
And then you get your spinoff of Left 4 Dead, the game.
Bingo. Which, I mean, it's a remake of the original, you know, 1978 Dawn of the Dead. But
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, that was Zack Snyder's first movie, you know, freaking, new Superman movie. I mean, he's done a lot of, like, big movies since then, but that was his first.
Speaking of Batman, so did you catch, you know, on the premiere of The Walking Dead, kind of going back to it, you know, it's supposed to be the dude from Gotham.
The guy that plays Penguin.
Yep, they flew him in for one day just to kill him off and then sent him on his way.
Well, that's because, like, I don't know why they brought him in, but, like, if you remember back to the season, like I said, where Rick made Carol split. He was like, you know, you can't be around us if you're going to just kill people.
It's all right. It's not zombies. We're cool.
Anyway.
We're trying to vacuum up the zombie virus.
Holy fuck.
The rat upstairs, like, may just be plagued with Ebola. We're not sure.
We really do need to get that recording sign to hang up upstairs.
Anyway. We really do. So, and then you see that kid at the beginning of that episode, and he's bound and gagged, and he head over the trough, and I went, holy shit. I was like, that's that dude that was with that girl, the hippie dudes.
I didn't even realize that until
I recognized him instantly.
Where she finds, like, Rick's watch.
Yeah.
Because they gave the kid the watch. Like, I didn't even realize that until you said it.
Yeah, no, I liked how, you know, Carol walks in and she starts piecing everything together, you know, from the get-go.
She figures
it's
it
like,
out.
Oh, shit, there's the crossbow, there's a machete, there's the, you know, watch and everything, and...
What about Carol being completely fucking Special Forces in that episode?
Oh, dude, she was straight ninja.
She was straight up...
You know, I saw people, you know, hating on, you know, the whole, you know...
And what about the big hug that... fucking Daryl gave her at the end of the episode. It was like he ain't never seen no pussy before in his life. And he was like...
Well, I mean, you know, everybody kept trying to... There's this big, you know, thing on the internet going around, you know, is Daryl gay, and blah,
I don't
blah,
give
blah,
a
blah.
Fuck if he's gay or not. Dude's got a crossbow. He's badass.
You know, I'd welcome the dude to my party anytime, you know. I mean, regardless, we're not going to discriminate against sex, religion, creed, race, or anything of that nature. You know, if you're going to help me survive, then... Fuck it.
We'll get into that in a minute, but let's finish the list up so that we can get into, you know, how people would survive and what kind of things.
Well,
they
number two, since we just talked of the remake of Dawn of the Dead, number two is the original 1978 Dawn of the Dead.
Dude, there's nothing like watching that on a sheet in the middle of the night at a bar next to a haunted house.
I mean, it was.
You guys need to do a podcast.
Voted best
about...
film of 1979.
Really?
Yes.
Holy shit.
And.
Who
it was
made
in the
that?
Top,
one?
That was George A. Romero. Yes, George Romero. That was the sequel to the Night
That was
of
his.
Dead.
You guys have got to do an episode about, like, ghost hunting and shit, because I did a lot of that stuff in the.
Oh, that's
oh, yeah,
on
late
the agenda.
90s, early 2000s.
We're working on putting that one together. That one was cool too, because it was, like, again in a mall, and it took place over a period of time. You know, there was, like, several months of them living in this mall and how. Society was kind of falling apart.
Yeah.
So, all right, you know, I've seen the study, the dude that, you know, tried to survive 30 days just eating McDonald's alone.
Holy fuck,
you know,
he looked like me. That was a lot of sexy, bro.
You know, how do you survive, you know, that much food court food? And you're scrounging.
The bourbon chicken at the Cajun place is awesome.
There's only so much bourbon chicken, man. I mean, you'd have to ration out, like, three pieces per individual.
What people don't understand is...
You're the Moe's. You just eat the McDonald's last.
You can't eat the stuff. I mean, it will, because if you run out of power,
yeah,
the stuff's going to go bad. It's not going to keep.
Yeah, there's not a lot of, like, canned foods
in
it.
It's not like you're
going to
start eating raw, you know, uncooked McDoubles and
shit. You probably survive longer in Walmart because, you know. You got canned goods and you got cooking utensils.
See, that's they got epic amounts of salt, so we can just start curing everything.
Well, number one on the list, the original. Night of the Living Dead, 1968. And George A. like, so this was the first where we had the
actual true definition of you know, zombie. What most people would consider a zombie.
They're going to get you, Barbara.
She was creepy as hell.
Dude, I don't even have my wig on. You can't even look at me that way.
Holy shit.
And what's great is that dude was just being a dick, and then he's like the first one to get eaten.
Absolutely. The dicks are always the first ones to go. Except for Merle.
Yeah.
Merle hung on a long time. Merle
yeah, was I was awesome. Surprised. I mean, which, you know, I mean, he Even brought that certain antagonist character. I mean.
But Merle was smart.
No, I mean,
I ever lose a hand, I'm getting me a knife hand. That knife hand was badass.
You get a knife hand, I'll knife get a machine hand a gun opener. Leg. I'll, you know, start practicing ballet or something. That way I can get all flexible and shit. So.
And I'm going to be like Conan and mount Oscars to my fucking hands.
And, you know, that movie was kind of controversial when it came out. You know, from the,
there was racism.
Yeah.
Deep-seated racism in that movie.
Yeah, because the hero was a black man. That was, you know, revolutionary for, you know, 1968. Yeah, you know, nowadays, you know, there's a whole stereotype of horror movies. The black guy always dies first.
And, well, you know, this dude like made it all the way through. How crazy is it though that you know the you know right as the second movie comes out, you see the dude walk out of the house. You think, oh shit, he's saved, blah blah blah, and they cap his ass.
Yeah, he makes it all the way through the movie, and then did you ever see the remake they did like in the whatever? Late two, it was '90s, I think.
I think it was around 19.
It was like a made for TV,
2000, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's 1990.
Yeah. And they kind of changed around in this one.
Savini,
yeah, Tom Savini, who did like some of the special effects, I think, in the early ones. But yeah, in this one, it was the girl was the hero instead of the dude from the original setup.
So, I'm not done with movies yet regardless of their top 10, you know, I watched one recently. And it blew my mind. And it was the craziest shit I've ever seen. Every pun that we make about farting and shitting and flatulence and ninjas and everything, this movie encompassed. And the Japanese did it so fucking well. So what we're going to go into is...
He's going deep somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. We're going into some next level shit. We're going zombie ass Toilet of the Dead.
What the hell?
That's a fucking movie?
So... Yeah, it's on Netflix, too, so be sure you check it out. But basically,
you
know,
this chick...
I'm not
going to watch that shit on Netflix. What's wrong with you?
Dude, I'm watching that tonight when I get home.
But anyway, you know, you get this ninja chick, right? And she's all upset that, you know, her sister was bullied and she dies. So she starts, you know, becoming a, you know, young karate student. And she's on her, you know, typical kind of American zombie-ist. Oh, let's go to the woods. You got your typical stoner, druggy. You got the hot supermodel that's... Oh, well, I need to stay thin, so there's certain parasite that's in the fish and everything. Well, turns out, you know, they eat this fucking parasite, and shit just starts going south. So, you know, basically, you know, they're all attacked by a crowd of poop-covered undead who emerge from an outhouse toilet. And,
no fucking way.
And in true horror movie fashion, there's some creepy old house with some mad scientist that's, you know, trying to use, you know, basically the parasites and the zombies to cure his own daughter disease. But you're left, you know, asking the quandrum, you know, can this young karate, you know, master help them escape? Or will she have to rely on, you know, her liberating power of flatulence to defeat, you know, the demented captors? So, I mean...
That's messed up, dude.
And you start talking about, you know, Chinese zombies and shit. Yeah. They don't walk. These fuckers hop. So you got fucking bunny rabbits coming at you and
farts.
Shit. Yeah.
They're propelled by their own farts.
So I encourage
You've
everybody.
Seen this?
No, I have not. I've just heard his description.
I'm not even going to look for it. I don't even think I want to.
Let me ask y'all this question. Jason Voorhees, is he a zombie?
I was thinking the same thing about fucking Michael Myers.
Yeah. Because the dude like takes all kind of like gets shot, blown up, everything else, and he's always
comes
back.
Always comes back.
I mean, you can't kill him.
I was thinking about that today when I was... like, kind of doing my half-assed regarded research for this podcast. And I was like, what about Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers?
Yeah, I mean...
I just rewatched Rob Zombie Halloweens.
He is one of the best horror directors out there right now.
Yeah, well, another one that I would encourage you to check out, a little bit older than Zombie, but check out Tim Snyder's shit. Fucking Strangeland and stuff.
Yeah, yep. That one with D. Snyder. That shit was fucked up.
Oh, yeah, D. Snyder. I'm sorry. I'm thinking, you know, fucking musical
What's
comedians
that,
and shit.
What's that other zombie movie? Night of the Meteor. Y'all remember that one?
I remember Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Basically, like, a meteor passes, like, you know, Halley's Comet or something passes close to the Earth.
I remember something about it.
It kills, like, most of the population, and they are just turned to dust. And the people that don't die become, like, zombies.
That's also basically the same fucking theme of that movie Maximum Overdrive with Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, the meteor anyway, like infected, topic. infected like cars and stuff. Yeah, and that was a weird movie too.
I mean, that's the cool thing about zombie topic. I mean, yeah, you got the big, you know, heavy hitters and shit, but there's so many
subgenre B movies
and stuff.
Recently
out there
went to a horror movie convention, and they had that semi. They had
the fucking Joker face from the
semi dude. at that. He said
that is badass.
That. I got a license to drive that, by the way. I have a Class A CDL.
Sweet, let's go fucking take some rigs and see what they can do.
Let's do donuts in a
dude,
semi.
If you're going to get one, you might as well get the Mac Daddy of everything. Get a Peterbilt 393. I'm dead serious, man. That thing will pull a fucking
I mean,
house
the only
down.
Thing, though, if I hear banjo music, I'm running.
Fuck that.
I don't need anybody to tell me I got a pretty mouth and shit. You know, we're not trying
to
go deliver.
Boy, you
got to
fuck you, damn.
All right, well, let's talk about, you know, survival tips for the zombie apocalypse. So we pretty much determined it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
I don't think it'll necessarily be anything like that. I think more along the lines it'll be a social and economical collapse.
Well, I don't, like I said, the actual dead rising from the grave, that's a little bit far. But the
the
28 days later, like rage zombies, like, you know, some kind of weird infection that makes people crazy homicidal. That's
like bath salts.
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude! That scared the shit out of me. When I saw that, there was like
three motherfuckers gonna trip out and eat my face.
He's eating the dude's face on the sidewalk, and I was like, "God damn!"
I was like, "It's happening! It's really happening!"
I started gathering arrows. I was like, "It's time to start fucking shaking."
You heard MC Chris's song "Tasty Face"? It's a parody of that song. I can't remember the song, but it's like, Hey, I just met you. I know this is crazy.
Call me baby.
It's like, he's like, I just met you. I know it's crazy, but I'm a zombie and your face looks tasty.
All right, so I'm going to go out.
We've already deemed we're not going to survive because we're going to make too many wisecracks.
Oh,
and
no. I'm going to survive. I can't guarantee.
The garage doors open, they're all filtering in this way. I got the fucking shit
right now,
for it, but
the first thing I'm going to do is pick up this mic stand and start whooping a motherfucker's ass.
The base of this mic stand is awfully
heavy. That's too far away.
Well, these mic stands are awfully heavy. I think we could take out a few zombies.
No, we could definitely bludgeon
several of them. Anyway, so my thing is, like, I actually participated in a couple of quote-unquote exercises in the military that had to do with quarantine-based infections. And that was some scary shit because they were talking about population control. And they were talking...
It makes you wonder what your government's really up to.
Dude, the government is some... Look, I am no fan of the man in office. I am not going to say anything other than that. But that motherfucker's playing golf for a reason. Plausible deniability.
I want a club.
Well, but
anyway, listen. The keys to that you would need to understand in an apocalyptic style issue would be movement, supplies, guns, ammo, anybody that you can use that has a technical skill or trade that you might find useful.
I'm pretty good at mixing podcasts.
Where the fuck are we going to find power for that? Wait, start up the generator. Anyway, but
this is we're going
to
get a ham radio
behind for the future generations to find. Like,
yeah,
everyone's been wiped out on this planet, but the aliens.
The podcast
we're kind of called a podcast.
Yeah,
what's a cigar nerd?
And so, how did he survive? He was a nerd. Nobody felt like killing him.
Like my
nerds
thing,
taste bad.
Yeah, it's definitely almost impossible to have every necessary skill, but you could put together a team of people.
Well,
that,
I mean, I would, you know, kind of going back to the CDC's article, you know, that they released, they kind of did the parody, you know, thing.
Yeah, they did
the
whole zombie preparedness guide.
Really?
Know,
you look at almost...
their advice would work for any apocalypse, not just the zombie apocalypse, but they figured people would listen. Yeah, they said,
you know, food, shelter, you know, I mean, just your basic necessities, a means to protect yourself. And
yeah, even if you're not going to go full, like, prepper.
See,
yeah, they say, you know,
thinking
good,
about this for a long time.
You need
time.
To have, like, at least, like, a 72-hour bailout.
Go bag. You need everybody, Podcast Nation, listen to me. You need to have a 72-hour go bag for you and everybody in your family. It needs to have water, food, supplies,
well, I mean, you
batteries,
saw...
flashlights. Flashlights are a must because you cannot see shit in the dark and you will fall and bust your head open to the white mud.
Look at what happened to...
You
want to
have everything that you can survive for at least 3 or 4 days until stuff calms down. Or
and,
you,
you know, people say, oh, well, you're talking about fucking diseases and zombie apocalypse. But look at the shit that happened to Atlanta. 3 days of an ice storm, and these people stranded out on the freeways and shit. People did not know what to do with themselves.
Well, I had buddies stuck in their cars like for days during that.
This is my story about Snowpocalypse 2014. I'm a school bus driver by trade.
Yeah,
I was stuck on a bus with kids that were scared because they didn't know how they were going to get home for hours. And then finally, when I made the decision myself, because our supervisors were like, you guys need to get as many kids home as you can. And I'm like, no, the kids are safer at the school. They have food, heat, water, and toilets.
Yeah, because once you get to a certain point, it was too late to leave. You need to like hunker down.
So I made it back to the bus barn, we call it, at around 10:05, 10:30-ish, somewhere around in there. It took me from 10:45 after my Jeep warmed up to 3:30 in the fucking morning to go from exit 10 to exit 14 on 400.
Yeah, and for folks that aren't familiar with the area, that's usually about a 10-15 minute stretch ride, if that.
Yeah, with no traffic.
Yeah, I mean, you're on a four-lane interstate. I didn't see any
traffic. Once I got on to 400 from exit 10, I didn't see any traffic until I got to exit like 12 or 13. That's when it started backing up. There was a dude that passed me in a Nissan Frontier, and he went by me, and he just started fishtailing, and I knew he wasn't going to catch it. And he went off on the wayside, and I was like, dude, you got to put that shit in low and keep it low.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
Let's ask what are some essential skills for the zombie apocalypse?
You need somebody that knows logistics. You need somebody that can read a map. You need somebody that can read a compass. You need somebody that knows how to
fucking navigate.
How to fucking navigate.
And if you don't have a map or compass or anything, you better know how to read that fucking sky.
Yeah, you better be able to read the sky.
You need people that can hunt and live off the land.
Multifaceted. I've been thinking about not necessarily having this skill set, but I have lived such a life that has allowed me to not necessarily be a jack of all trades, but I know a lot of shit about a lot of things.
And that's why, folks, country boys will survive.
You're damn right.
I can shoot, but I'm not a hunter. Like, I get too bored. I can't wait for my prey to find to wander up.
I can hunt,
but if I had to, fish. I could find find some food.
And people make fun of me for farm. People make fun of me for the tactical barbecue vest and everything else. But guess what? Shit, I'm protected by bullets. I'm protected by charcoal and everything else. We're going to fucking cook. We're going to eat. And we're not going to get food poisoning.
Look, Terminus, we ain't fucking dealing with that.
Yeah. You're not cooking me, okay?
Dude.
One tit would feed us for like a week. Anyway, I mean, that's a ham,
but
yo.
My biggest thing is like...
Dude, tit ham.
I'm just tripping you, man. I'm pulling a full Shane. That's the real secret of the zombie apocalypse. You don't have to be faster than the monsters.
Fuck my girlfriend.
You just have to be faster than your friends.
Damn right.
I mean, rule number one of Zombieland, right? Cardio.
See, I ain't got no cardio. I don't think any of us can run.
That's the thing about Zombieland, too. That was filmed here in Atlanta.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of those monsters were Netherworld crew. So I like to watch that movie and play and spot the zombie. I'm like, I know that guy.
My biggest thing is, like I said, I know a lot of different things. I don't know how to grow food yet. I'm sure with a farmer's almanac and some general skills, I could probably manage to muster up some tomatoes.
I'm sure we can raid a library and find a book.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I would do. I would look for things that I don't know.
Knowledge is probably the most important.
Anything
thing
that has to do with transportation, I can do. Any gun that has been manufactured in this century alone, I can probably manipulate better than most. I can hunt. I can fish. I can trap. I can track. I'm like Daryl Dixon, but with a Class A CDL.
Daryl might have been on how to drive a big truck. He was probably a trucker at some point.
I've got a crossbow. I've got compound bows. I've got shotguns. I've got...
Yeah, infants. I mean, I think that's one of the things that when you talk about the zombie apocalypse, most folks just say, I just need guns, blah, blah, blah.
No,
you're going to run out of ammo.
Exactly.
And I think in a zombie apocalypse and really any survival situation, stealth is going to be your best
friend.
That's
why I like the aspect of The Walking Dead where they are actually getting mano a mano and physically close, danger close to these walkers. And they are using knives.
Yeah, that was one of the first, first couple seasons. It's like, we need to conserve ammo.
Exactly.
If we can take them out with a knife, let's take them out with a knife.
Which I think...
Plus the sound will attract more zombies if we shoot
the
them.
The idea of walkers, I think that's a great philosophy. But if we're talking about a fucking rage virus or something else... And...
The biggest thing you have to worry about is staying away from the sick, like sequestering, Like, if it became...
I mean, there would have to be a true
an airborne
quarantine.
Virus or an airborne... Yeah.
Yeah, you need to get to the country.
Quick. You need to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Yeah.
You need to get your family, and you need to get as far up in the hills and the sticks.
Because the higher the population, the more zombies...
But let me ask you this, and this is going to sound cold, but once again, we're talking about survival. You know, if your family is a setback, do you necessarily take them? I mean, if it's truly survival of the fittest...
I would do as much as I could to protect everything that's mine. And... My kids know how to shoot. My wife knows how to shoot. I even taught my ex-wife how to shoot, which was probably a bad idea. But I thought of it as a necessary skill to have, and not because I'm quote-unquote a redneck or a country boy or whatever. It is because at some point in time, in my mind, and I'm not one of these, you know, conspiracy theorists or anything like that, but at some point in time, I feel that society... in itself is going to collapse in a whole.
Well, I mean, I look at it, you know, and I haven't served in the military or anything, but I've got, you know, you know, a lot of friends that are that way. And, you know, so many people, you know, we talked about folks walking around with tunnel vision, not being aware of their surroundings. And my personal life, even though I don't necessarily have, you know, any cause, but I walk on a yellow caution that checking 360 degrees. And
if you use
a certain level
fair,
of situational awareness, yes,
that's what I was going to say.
Stay alert, stay alive.
Bingo. Yeah. If you use a fair amount of, you know, caution and situational awareness is a big word. If you use that and like, what was that movie? Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
The world is draped in camouflage. But you need to be able to spot the evils that are in it.
I mean, I'm always in, like, threat assessment mode.
Exactly.
Because if you can see a potential threat far enough down the road, you can avoid that threat.
Bingo.
You know, you don't want it happening to you. You know, if you can avoid that situation, you know, first. Well, as we're kind of, like, reaching the limit of our time here, let's kind of go around the table. And what is your preferred zombie apocalypse, you know, loadout here, your weapon supplies?
Me, personally... I want something with reusable ammo, so I'm going to either some form of crossbow or something of that nature. That way I can retrieve the arrows. But I also want something that's heavy hitting with a lot of range that if I've got a compound or an area that if you're a half mile from me, I'm going to be able to pick you off.
Zombie Stumpy.
All right. My loadout is this. I have a Remington Model 700. That's my long-range weapon.
I want one of those.
I have a semi-automatic shotgun. I have two M4s in case one breaks down. I have two compound bows and a crossbow. And if you really want to get technical about it, I am in the process of making punch sticks, which are broomsticks with knives at the end of them.
Nice bludgeoning, give you a 3-4 foot reach.
Well, gives
you don't
you,
have to
it,
give
well,
them certain...
Yeah, it gives you enough room that if you need to poke a couple of holes in some dudes and keep on moving, you can. But my thing is, people need to understand that you have to have... It's not about having guns and having ammunition. It's about being able to use what's available to you at the present moment. And also, if you get a gun, you need to understand how to grip it, how to hold it, how to function the weapon properly, and if it malfunctions, you need to know malfunction drills. This is stuff that was taught to me by the military. I can teach anyone, anywhere, anytime, any age, as long as they're big enough to hold a gun, how to manipulate a weapon good enough that they can protect themselves.
Yeah, I'd say for me, of course, a bow and arrow is probably necessary, but if you get into like a really bad situation, you're going to run out of arrows quick. I want a, you know, M4, AR-15, you know, you can put a 50-round mag in that thing, and a suppressor, because you're not going to hear those, it's not going to attract the attention, and throw a bayonet on that thing, too, so bayonet. you run low, you start, you know, jabbing zombies in the face.
And yeah, I mean, start shaking them, motherfucker.
Civil War era, yeah, I mean, just...
And also, like I said, the AR, you know, the 5.56 is probably one of the most common calibers you're going to find.
And that, I would say that's another thing that folks need to hear.
The problem with your theory about getting all that stuff is...
See, I already got all that stuff.
Well, I've got it, too. But the problem with the common folk that don't understand that they need to be prepared for it, they go, oh, shit, I need to go get this stuff. And by the time they go get it, every fucking redneck in six counties is going to be raided... Yeah. the Academy, the Walmart, and any place that has ammo, as long as they
have... Well, I mean, you look at what happened just earlier, I mean, you know, toward the end of last year with the new gun legislation.
Yeah. Everybody went nuts
Holy
for
ammo. Hell,
you're
talking...
I'm telling you right now, I've got to be on 5 different government watch lists. I have 6,000 rounds of 9mm and 5,500 rounds, last count, of 5.56. I am not fucking around. But
So we're all meeting at his house when the apocalypse kicks off.
Don't come to my house because somebody's got to tote all that fucking ammo.
All right, well, I think that about wraps it up here on the zombie apocalypse podcast. So now the recent, what do you think of this monster cigar here, Brad?
I think the monster cigar deserves the monster following that it came with it. I mean,
it's got a good aroma to it, and I don't even smoke cigars.
You know that
I'm like, it burned well. It got a good flavor to it. It's I usually smoke the really, really dark stuff, and it's got
but
some
you know what?
To it, but it's not like a
even
a real
though it's
strong
not
cigar.
You know a you know triple Maduro wrapper or anything. I mean, it's definitely got some strength and some body to it.
You guys
and
are definitely cigar nerds.
Exactly.
That's why we have a podcast, yo.
We're getting shirts made, man. All right, that pretty much brings us to the end here. Stump, thanks for joining us and sharing your knowledge with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
anytime,
and we'll have you on some future episodes as well. So
absolutely.
And we'll be back here shortly with our Beer 30 segment. So see y'all in a minute.
Stay tuned, folks.
Killers are eating the flesh of the people they murder.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. Time for some Beer 30. So what are we drinking today, Brad?
Today we are drinking the Founder's Dirty Bastard. It is a Scotch-style ale, and I gotta say, this thing is delicious.
Oh yeah, yeah. Dirty Bastards. I figured that was I picked that beer out because I figured, that's fitting for us, good. Because we tend to be dirty bastards.
Cigar nerds, a.k.a. Dirty Bastards.
Especially since we've been talking about zombies this episode, if you're in the zombie
die
apocalypse...
Die, you zombie bastards!
There is not a lot of showers in the zombie apocalypse, so everyone's going to be a dirty bastard at some point if you survive past the first week.
What about our females, man? Are they going to... They can't be considered bastards.
Yeah, but I don't want to say dirty bitch on the podcast. That's just sexist.
Whoa.
We can call ourselves dirty bastard, but I don't want to offend our female listener.
Our one female listener.
Yeah, probably.
Our two. Our three.
I don't know.
Maybe it's all females. I mean...
My mom hasn't figured out how to use iTunes yet. I tried to explain to her what a podcast was the other day and failed miserably. So, I think we're still at one female listener. If I'm wrong, please, email us. Let us know that you're listening to the podcast. The Founders is a Scotch ale. According to their website, so good it's almost wrong. Dark ruby in color, brewed with 7... varieties of imported malts, complex and finished with hints of smoke, which we like smoke, and peat, paired with a malty richness and a right hook of hop power to give it the bad attitude that a beer named Dirty Bastard has to live up to.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
It ain't
the
for the
hops
wee lads.
Don't jump out and slap me in the face on this one. And then again, it could be the complexity of the cigar paired with the beer, but I mean, they're complementing each other very well, and I guess a complex beer and complex cigar, and I mean they're about the same color. The pairing is just delicious.
It's not a stout, but with this that scotchy flavor to it, it almost has like hints of a stout beer.
I mean, this is something that if I'm sitting around,
ale.
Once fall kicks in and we're sitting around a campfire or something, and 50, 60 degree, temperature, just a cool night air. I mean, this just warms the belly enough. Yeah. And
it almost reminds me of the original Innocent Gun. It's definitely got that whiskey flavor to it.
I mean, I would say I prefer this over the original Innocent Gun. I mean, Innocent Gun on, you know, we're going to reference the official Untappd Cigar Nerd beer review here. And Innocent Gun for me is about a 4. This one I'm going to bump it up and say it's about a 4.5.
Yeah, I kind of rated it a 4 for me because, yeah, I said it's... But yeah, it is definitely a good beer. Yeah, I love pretty much all things Innocent Gun. But yeah, this right here, it ranks up there with it.
I mean, it's not a super, you know, high gravity beer either. I mean, coming in at 8.5%, 50 IBUs. For something that's
international bitter units
round,
for people who are unfamiliar.
And, you know, looking here too, it took the 2010 WBC silver medal. So... I mean, if it's winning medals, it's better than anything I've ever brewed.
Yeah, Founders make some good beers too. I have had a few of their other flavors, and this one also available year round. So it's not like some of the seasonal beers we've talked about in the past. Yeah, this one you can get at any time. But this is definitely, I think, on my winter cold weather beer list.
Yeah, it definitely beats some of the pumpkins and stuff that we've had previously. So.
I think I just accidentally dropped some ash in my glass, but that only adds to the flavor.
That's only going to enhance it. Right here, we're waiting on the official taste and the review.
Just a little bit more smokiness, yeah. That's probably, yeah. Pro tip here, don't leave your beer glass near your ashtray. Accidents happen.
Yeah, I mean, as cigar nerds, not only are we here to coach you on the good things and what we like to indulge ourselves in, but also our rookie and amateurish mistakes on how to screw up being a cigar nerd.
Yeah, this one, like I said, I recommend wearing a kilt while you drink it since it is a Scotch ale.
I feel almost like I should have an eye patch or something too. I don't know what it is.
I mean,
you know, I'm looking at the front of the bottle here, and I mean, dude, is that some kind of evil Jesus Christ or something on the front of this thing?
That's a bearded Scotsman. Who knows? Jesus could have been Scott. I don't know.
I mean, it looks like he's got the crown, the whole nine yards. I mean,
you put your glasses on.
Why do you have glasses, dude?
This is a man who would wear a kilt, laddie. You dirty bastards.
And just remember, folks, if you're getting married in a kilt, make sure you wipe your ass good. Don't go leaving skid marks on the wife's wedding dress and stuff. It doesn't bode well.
That's one of the best news stories of, someone got, you know, married in a traditional kilt and sat in his wife's lap during the wedding photos and left a skid mark on her wedding dress, which resulted in a huge fight with half the wedding party getting locked up.
I mean, that's almost like some straight up Pat Field and McCoy shit right there. I could see how that originally happened. I mean,
yeah, it's not a good Scott wedding without, you know, a fight breaking out.
So, I mean, you're saying you give this a 4. At a 4.5 here. I mean, any additional thoughts or anything on this one? Or
I think we should have another.
My glass is half empty. Therefore, that means it can consume another 12 fluid ounce bottle.
All right, I think that wraps up Beer 30. We'll be back with some science.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back. Are you ready for some science?
I'm about to get educated, yo.
Let's drop some science on these bitches.
All right. What's up first?
All right. What does all, like, freaking deep space sci-fi movies have in common?
Usually something goes awry and they drift and there's asteroids and, you know, people come out and they're like, hey, we're trying to save the world and shit. Or they run into some kind of alien race. It's like... Oh, we destroyed your ship and everybody on it. Now we're coming for Earth.
Well, besides that, also, there's always the thing of we're going to be traveling space a really, 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 really long time. So we're just going to pop people into a freezer for the duration of the trip and just wake them up when we get there. I mean, they did it in Aliens. They did it in
All right. I mean, let's
Lost
just go
in
ahead.
Space.
So we're going to talk about cryogenics. Okay, fine. I see where we're going.
Not necessarily cryogenics, but... You know, hibernation for space travel. Because for a manned mission to Mars, it takes pretty much at our current...
We're going to the red planet?
Yeah, probably.
Sweet.
You know, at our current level of technology, it's about a 180-day trip one way. And to do that, you have to have a... Not only is, you know, people going to go crazy sitting in, you know, for half a year in a freaking spaceship doing nothing, but you have to...
Are there going
to
be females?
Probably.
I'll figure out something to do.
But you have to...
Can I do that in space?
Yes. It's just kind of weird. Zero gravity, it gets freaky.
Are you sure? How many zero gravity escapades have you had, Joe?
Three. I get abducted a lot. But the thing is, they like I said, it also you have
I don't
to carry...
think that's a true thing at all. I think you just told me a bold faced lie.
No. Aliens are down with me. I watch X-Files all the time. But you have to pack more food, and you also generate a lot of waste, and that adds to the weight of the ship, and it
and
makes
what
it...
kind of waste are we talking about, Alejandra?
Space poop. So, in looking on ways to lighten up the ship,
and
one of the things
the time
is...
where we drop in the Dollar Shave plug for One Wipe Charlie's.
Oh, God. But they, you know, one of the ways they can cut down on weight and stuff is to have the astronauts not be awake for the journey. And they're actually, you know, starting
Dude,
to look
I don't
into...
think I can sleep for 6 months.
Well, they're actually starting to look into, you know, hibernation as a, you know, as a way to sleep through the trip. And they already do it in the medical world because, you know, if you're like really bad, jacked up, injured, they'll put you into a medically induced coma, which they call torpor, which is close to the, like, what you get when you have hypothermia. Your body shuts down to conserve energy. You don't need food. You produce less waste.
Yeah, basically just, hey, keep the vital functions going.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, you know, cause I really don't want to wake up 6 months later with a pants full of poo. You know, it's like I said, so it pretty much just shuts your body down, but you
nah,
still
dude, they got bags
alive.
For that. Trust me.
Dude, could you imagine changing a six-month-old diaper when you get, you know, to where you're going? That's going to be no
bueno. I mean, I'm just, you know, on the topic of diapers and adults and space travel and everything. So, you notice you're a baby, right? You get diapers. You ever notice? Oh, it's called Pampers. You get old, you give all the world you have of your life and everything else. All of a sudden, you go to buy the same shit, and they call it Depends. Come on, man. Like, really? See what I did there? You see what I did there. I see the look. You can't even keep a straight face.
Oh, God.
That was just pure knowledge. Yeah, see, you thought all this time you were going to educate me? Well, hey, tables turn, my friend.
Well, the company that's working on this is called Spaceworks, and they're using a technology called Rhino Chill system, which is basically huffing coolant.
I got a rhino bed in my truck.
Not different thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but basically it takes 6 hours to get someone into this medically induced coma using this technique, which basically forces them into like a hypothermic state by they basically breathe a coolant and they lower the temperature slow enough that, you know, that it's not going to cause damage like it would like external freezing.
Do you get bed sores or, I mean, I could just imagine being stuck in one position for 6 months. I mean, I know like when I've broken bones and things that, you know, once that cast comes off, dude, that limb is pretty much useless for, you know, a week or two. So what are they doing to like...
Well, that's one of the things they haven't quite figured out yet because, you know, there is going to be some kind of, you know, muscle atrophy when you get to where you're going. You're definitely going to be weaker because you've not moved for 6 months. You know, if there's, you know, some way to keep, you know, your muscles good, maybe fills you some roids and stuff while you're asleep.
Yeah,
so you wake
I
up
imagine,
all,
you know, too,
you wake up all hulked out and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of the Hulk, yeah, I'd imagine there's probably some psychological stuff that would need to be worked out too, because I don't think you want Hulk smashing up your spacecraft.
And like I said, but the other problem is so far they've only, like, you know, knocked people out for at the maximum 7 days. So we're a long way from the 180-day trip to Mars. But this would cut the weight of the ship in half. So we
I would say approximately 173 days.
No, it's 180.
No, 173. If they've already knocked them out for seven, I mean, there's your difference.
Damn
again,
you with your math.
I, dude, just wait. The upcoming segment, I'm about to rock this.
Yeah, you pronounce the big words that, you know, numbers that I've never seen before.
More zeros than I can even count to.
All right, next up. Now, have you ever wanted to destroy a planet? You know, like, you know, you want to build a Death Star, go blow up Alderaan, or your neighbor's cat, you know, whatever you get your kicks up.
And I just want to go ahead and throw it out. We do not condone violence to animals and everything, so you have to excuse Smoke and Joe here. He didn't mean to be insensitive, so if we have cat lovers out there, please don't be offended and everything. Strictly just a reference point, because we all know cats are at some point going to take over the planet.
Well, a physicist has come up with what it would actually take to blow up a planet if you built a Death Star. I believe he's written a book, or it's...
let's see, I'm looking it up here for you, too.
But basically, it's, you know, if you had the $850 quadrillion it would take to build a Death Star, the next problem you run into is power. You know, the amount of power that it would take to dissolve, you know, break down the bonds that hold, you know, matter
basically
together.
Basically, you know, to, you know, be able to blow apart the gravitational binding energy of the world. I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there for you folks. I mean, you're looking at 224, no nillion. There it is.
Yeah, that's 224 with 30 zeros after it.
Count them, folks. 30.
It's such a big number that, yeah, that's joules, by the way, energy, numerics there.
Yeah, basically, if you go to, you know, buy a decent surge protector and stuff, they'll say, oh, yeah, we protect up to 500 joules or something. I mean, there's your reference point.
Yeah. So even if you could generate that kind of power to destroy a planet, the next problem you have is, I believe one of, is it Einstein's theories? One of the big theories that, you know, for every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. Like when you fire a gun, you get a recoil. Now, the amount of recoil you would get for firing a laser that produces 224 nonillion worth of power is going to knock the space station into, like, the next galaxy and probably kill everyone on board.
Hell nah, dude, because it's a Death Star. You've spent $850 quadrillion on it. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of recoil is going to jack some shit
up.
Think
about the currency aspect of things. I mean, you look at all the accounts and money and forms of currency in the world. You come up to roughly a good estimate as of 2013 was about $75 trillion. So, well, I mean, we're going to have to get busy. I mean, we got to come up with some better printers or start investing in Bitcoins or something.
Well, you know, if you happen to run a galactic empire and can, you know, build a giant space station like that, the one way this, did you ever find his name, the physicist that wrote this article?
I have not yet.
Well, anyway, he...
This guy's elusive. I mean...
Ethan Seagal, or Siegel, however you pronounce that. I don't know if he's related to Steven Seagal or not. But yeah, his theory of the only way that you could do it and not have the recoil problems that you would with that giant laser and not need the
massive, the so-called scientist guy you keep referencing, just go ahead and throw it out there, Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah,
the whole theory of relativity. And yeah, there we go. I mean, you'll have to excuse our earlier beer segment
consumption. I took biology in college. I didn't take... took biology and, you know, criminology. I didn't take physics.
Loser.
Whatever. But anyway, his solution to the energy problem was, instead of a laser, you use antimatter. Now, if you had a asteroid size hunk of antimatter, that would definitely blow up a planet. Because basically it takes matter and just, you know, antimatter and matter gets together. It's no bueno.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you're looking at there is your antimatter would annihilate any regular matter, creating a nova of pure heat and light, and overcome Alderaan's gravitational binding energy, therefore wiping the planet.
Sweet.
Or any Earth-like planet, like Alderaan.
Well, yeah, still going to be a little expensive, because right now antimatter costs about $62 trillion per ounce, or no, per gram, and we're going to need like a couple billion tons of it. But still, I mean, it's not just doable.
Any antimatter. You've got to have a billion, and I think this is pronounced tones.
That's tons. It's a plural of tons.
No. Unacceptable.
I know, it's big.
Yeah, it's
but it's still
a lot.
Less than the nonillion worth of energy you would need if you're using a giant laser. Speaking of lasers, have you ever tried to have sex with a bug zapper?
I have not, but speaking of lasers, that 3-foot barbecue fork over there, it is laser guided, as well as so is the pizza cutter.
Yeah, I imagine if you did try that, it would be kind of like dubstep. I mean, that's basically how they come up with dubstep is, you know, a DJ had sex with a bug zapper and that's what came out.
I always just compared it to having a seizure. I mean, that's what I always did for me. I'd sit there and flail around like I had no bones.
Well, scientists, at the National Academy of Sciences, I have tried to have a problem run into a problem with emerald ash borers, which is a beetle that is destroying an Asian beetle, little ninja bastards, that are destroying the ash tree population. And they're like, you know, they've tried all the...
Apparently this thing's pretty widespread, too. Yeah. I mean, two and dozen U.S. states right now are currently affected.
They've tried all the traditional means of, you know, poisons. The only problem with poison is that it wipes out all the bugs, not just the ones that we need.
Yeah, we already got a honeybee problem.
And, you know, all kind of stuff like that. Well, they've come up with a new trap that they're testing out, which basically takes advantage of a evolutionary... I call it an evolutionary trap. Like, you're conditioned to do this one thing.
Yeah, I think what you're leading up to... And now if they make that one thing
kill you...
It's called dating.
Well, pretty much. So these scientists have spent time and made fake...
Just an asshole comment?
Fake female bugs of this beetle population and have them in, you know, in leaves and stuff. Well, when the male bug flies by, sees this hot chick and, you know, runs up and is like, "What's up, baby?" Well, they get a 4,000-volt jolt when they try to have sex with the... Yeah, you know, other female beetle. So basically, they've built a beetle bug zapper lady.
That's dangerous. Although, you know, I will say, maybe, you know, humans at some point, maybe that's a good way to stop, you know, freaking guys from preying on women and stuff like that, too. I mean, dude, I mean, you know, we could take this thing to a whole nother level here. And, I mean, you screw up one time and... Hey.
Yeah, the creator of this project is Michael Dominic, and you know, they say it's got its good points too, because it's like I said, it targets the beetles they want to get, and it also makes them easy to count, so they, you know, because they just, you know, look at the pile of dead bugs under wherever they've left these you know, bug zapped models. They're still having to kind of narrow it down too, because you know, unfortunately, they, you know, also the predators of those beetles that they kind of want to have, you know, they say, "Oh yeah, there's me a snack," and go to eat the beetle, and they get zapped too.
Dude, and I'm looking here.
And then other beetles may...
4,000 volts?
Yeah.
For a freaking beetle?
Yeah.
Holy bejeebus.
That's going to be... That's like some taser stuff right there, man. That's going to like smoke a beetle.
I mean, I hope I don't accidentally step on one of those thinking it's a beetle, man. I'm going to lose a leg or, you know...
That's one of the problems. You know,
my body.
It definitely works on the intended beetles, but then it maybe get, you know, like I said, the predators are getting hit. The beetles that are of a close species that, you know, may try to, you know, or idiots that are like, "Hey, there's a bug. Let me pick that up." Zap. Yeah. So it's not foolproof yet, but they're so far it's working, and they're, you know, trying to, you know, perfect the trick now. They said it takes advantage of what they call, like I said, evolutionary trap, where, like, you know, like, birds are conditioned to think that there is nothing, that, you know, the skies are always open. Well, that's why they hit windows, because they're not used to there being, "Hey, there's a clear spot. I'm going to fly through that." And they're not used to there being, you know,
yeah,
a solid object there.
I got a tear rolling down my left eye. Right.
So the bugs are conditioned like, "Hey, there's some mating action going on. I'm going to go mate," and then zap, which would really ruin my day.
I hope my girlfriend does not catch on to this technology. I'm so screwed.
Take the taser to bed with you. All right, well, I think that about wraps up our science segment. We'll be back in a minute with some nerd news.
Stay tuned, folks.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
And welcome to this week's nerd news segment. We've got a special treat in store for you folks. This is going to be the spooky segment with your host, Brad Jackson.
And Smokin' Joe. If you'll remember from our last episode, we did a haunted house preview special for, and we've since then have gone out and seen several of the haunted houses that are on our list. So tonight we're going to give you the good, the bad, and kind of drop our rating on these haunted houses.
Absolutely. I guess first and foremost, to start with the most popular attraction here in the Atlanta area. And,
number one haunted house in the country.
Let's open it up to Netherworld Haunted House.
So I could let you take the lead on this one because I'm biased because, you know, this is...
I've been
here for like, you know, 10, 11 years. So
you
far.
Look at the ratings, you know, on Haunt World and you see the segments on Travel Channel featuring the house and everything. It's really hard not to be biased. I mean, you just got to think. There's not any other house that's got the type of budget, the investment, the high quality actors.
It's more of a, you know, not just a haunted house. It's more of an attraction. It's like, you know, Six Flags or whatever.
Well, I mean, you look at it when the, you know, episodes start talking about, you know, you're actually walking through a million-dollar Hollywood production. You know, I hear a lot of over-exaggerated reviews and stuff. This is not the case with Netherworld. I mean, yeah, it's
this
like,
is the closest you're
holy
to
crap,
being
I'm standing on the set of an actual horror film.
Yeah. I mean, in most of the other haunted houses, they get to, you know, maybe spend 2 months building their haunted house, and we work on ours, like, year-round.
And, I mean, the other thing, too, that really stands out is the quality of the actors. I mean, how many actors from Netherworld go on to, you know, serve as extras or do set production or makeup effects and everything else for, you know, actual Hollywood productions that you see on the big screen?
Yeah, and it's, you know, the Netherspawn, which is, you know, the actors there are what makes the haunted house. I mean, you know, one good animatronic is awesome, but, you know, I'd rather have 20, you know, badass actors.
Absolutely.
So let's start with the first house, Spliced. Let's give it, what's the good in your opinion?
I mean, the good for me is Spliced. You know, this is usually the second house that I go to that's downstairs. It's usually the bloodiest, the goriest and everything. And it's also got some of the, you know, kind of gross out gags and things that really appeal to me. You know, through this segment, we're going to rate everything on a severed head sked, or, I apologize, rating.
1 to 5 severed heads. And like I said, also the good with Splice, too, is the, like I said, a lot of cool lighting effects. I mean, there was a lot of big, you know, nasty props down there. And they, you know, they really change up the path of the haunt this year. I mean, normally
it was very disorienting this year going through. I mean
they always change the scenery, but the use of the path kind of stays similar. And it was definitely, you know, way different this year, and that was added to the confusion and the claustrophobia.
There were a couple of times, I mean, where I found myself, you know, pinned between an animatronic and another animatronic, and you're just like, all right, which way am I going? I mean, there was very good misdirection and everything, and luckily, we caught the house early enough in the season that the lines weren't incredibly long, so we were able to take our time and, you know, really experiment, make sure that the upcoming actors were able to get back in position and stuff. And, I mean, it was definitely a very enjoyable evening.
Yeah, if we have to come up with a bad for this, I think the only bad that I could say is sometimes, like I said, if you go on one of those busy nights, because it's so popular, I mean, people come from out of state, that it may get a little overloaded, and like I said, it...
Yeah, I mean, I can say, you know, we went last year, for instance, we went early in the year, like they did a press night in, you know, September or something like that, and there were very few people. Well, we had such a good time that we went back with a group of 6 or 8 people, probably, you know, there toward the last week of the month, and, I mean, it was just a solid line of people all the way through the house, you know, unfortunately, and... You know, I mean, that's no fault to Netherworld. It's just, like you said, so popular that, I mean, they can't have actors stand from, you know, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
So what's your rating on Spliced?
I'm going with 5 severed heads on this one.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. I said it is always
that's only because that was the house you were in.
Yeah, I was the worm guy in the basement. The main show.
The oversized trimmer, if you will.
Yeah. The main show, Witches. I mean, the good on that, I mean, it was a spectacular show. I mean, it was just the
I mean, even
artistry.
Waiting in line was awesome. I mean, yeah, you know, not to spoil too much for you folks, but, you know, you're standing in line, you go into the house, instantly you get dumped into, you know, a very confusing mirror maid, only to come out and there's a surprise waiting for you is all I got to say.
And like I said, that's one of the things of Netherworld that I don't see a lot of the other haunted house doing is there. It's a show from the minute you get out of your car before
you
even get in the house.
Standing in line, you're still being entertained.
There's photo ops. There's people trying to scare you while you're walking through the parking lot. I mean, it's an overall experience. You're not just waiting in line. You know, people are screwing with you while you're, you know, waiting in line.
Whoa.
A little Freudian slip there.
I didn't get that treatment. Where do I got to go for that one?
Whoa. You got to be special, but I'll give that. You know, if we had to do a bad, it would, you know, like I said, if you go on the wrong night, it's very crowded. But even then, even the main house, even with like when it's a crowded night, they still try to, you know, break it up into groups, and it's not as,
you know, I've been in, like, on busy, you know, nights, and you'll actually run into an area, and you know, one of the actors will actually, you know, stop you and, you know, engage you a little bit while you're just, you know, waiting to create space and stuff. So, you know, everybody's so well trained there to handle the crowds that,
yeah, even if it, the, you know, it is backed up where you're not really able to move, you know, it's not just a jump out, go boo. You know they'll actually come out and engage with you, and you know, there's a lot of character development with these guys. So yeah, I definitely give that one another five out of five severed heads.
And on to the next house, Joe. You had an opportunity to check this one out this year. I have not been yet, but I'll probably make it this weekend's excursion. What do we have next on the list?
That would be Chambers of Horror at the Masquerade Rock Club. You know, any of you metalheads that have been down to the Masquerade are quite familiar with that location, which is a weird location anyway, because it's like, you know, Civil War
era.
Dude,
you can't pick a better location.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It is definitely spooky. And the line goes around behind the club where it's, like I said, it's kind of dark and scary.
And, you know, since we are the cigar nerds and we have the Beer 30 segment, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there. Probably one of the most unique things is there's actually the lounge outside, so you can go and have a beer either before you check out the Han or after, or you can pregame and postgame.
Yeah, I had a couple of Sweetwaters while I was waiting in line, and it was cool. They had like a big projection screen up showing a bunch of old like 60s and 70s horror movie trailers and stuff. So yeah, it was definitely a cool experience. I think every haunted house should have a bar now. I mean, I thought it was the coolest thing. I almost didn't want to go into the haunted house. I'm like, I was having fun hanging out in the parking lot.
Yeah, and I just want to go ahead and throw it out there. Do keep in mind, folks, that if you're planning on making this excursion, it is 18 and up only.
Yeah, that's one of the unique things about it. It is a geared toward the adult. You know, there's, you know, a little bit of, you know, nudity or, you know, simulated nudity. And it's definitely grosser than most haunted houses. I mean, you'll get stuff sprayed on you and people will get up in your face. And then there's also, you know, zombie strippers. It's, you know,
just all around good times.
Yeah.
What could a cigar nerd ask for?
Yeah, there was a zombie pole dancing at one point. It was quite unique. I'd say that one, for me, it was at least a 4.5 stars.
Yeah,
I mean, I really enjoyed it.
I haven't had an opportunity to check it out this year yet, but I did go last year. And I will say that you're right. There were a lot of the over-the-top. Almost kind of reminded me of a, you know, maybe a Saw to Hostel style environment, if any of you folks have seen those two movies.
This is the first year I've been. I've heard that, yeah, it kind of got gore porn in the last couple of years. But yeah, this year it's the story is like, it's like an underground military experiment, you know, trying to come up with some kind of super soldiers. And but the you know, actors, I mean, the sets looked awesome. Even the gross ones looked awesome. And the actors had very, you know, very developed characters and were, you know, really enthusiastic about their jobs. It was gross, scary, and there was some parts that were just damn hilarious to me.
Yeah, and I like you know, this one and some of the other houses we've been to this year. It seems like a big thing is, you know, almost simulated environments. Either you're on a train, you're on an elevator or something.
That's the type of stuff. Seems, I don't to know be if it's just just the sign of the times or whatever, but I swear, like, every haunted house I've been into, except for Netherworld, there was a elevator prank or something where you got into like a boxcar. So I was like three out of the haunted houses we've been to, there was an elevator elevator like experience in each haunted house.
So I mean, that's just a good gag all around, I think. Anything else on Chamber of Horrors?
Now that we move on to the next one, which was Talmadge Brothers and Jasper.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there. You know, four severed heads on this one. One, for it to be a local haunt. Two, they got a cool location, being a casket company and everything. I mean, I think standing in line, they were even firing off the torch a couple of times on top of the building, which, I mean, dude, just lit up the night sky. You were just like, whoa, that's freaking awesome.
And it was kind of a creepy location because it was in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, it was... We were like, this has got to be a trap.
I mean, you know, that's just like standing out in the parking lot. I mean, you had, what, probably 16, 17, you know, your old teenagers standing out there that were afraid to go through and intimidated and stuff.
Yeah,
so
there was one guy there that they were trying to talk us into, since, you know, me and Brad were like the you know, biggest dudes in the parking lot. They're like, what if these guys go in and escort you through? Will you go in then? And he still wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, Another thing that I got to give him props for is the actor's energy at the house was,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it was first class. I mean, you could tell that everybody that you came to was high energy and they were in it to win it.
Yeah, like I said, for the also in the good segment too was the I said there was a lot of like walls moving and stuff like that. The sets look pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean,
the misdirection was one thing.
It was definitely
how
not
many rooms
a.
Did we come to and we were just like,
how do we get out of this room?
And then do we go through a curtain? What do we do here?
We turn around and the path we just came through is now gone. Yeah, that was kind of cool. And like I said, there wasn't a lot of animatronics in it. It was a like I said a local haunt. Yeah, I think we talked to one of the guys in there. He said it was about 2 months or something like that construction wise, and they did a good job. I was impressed for like I said, for a local haunt like that.
Yeah, and the price, we touched on it previously on one of our prior segments, but for $15, you get unlimited trips through the house, and I don't know another house that's doing anything like that.
And if we have to go, like I said, we give you the good, but we also if there's any bad, we want to equal opportunity. Yeah, is there any improvements? Like I said, I give it a four out of five too. I mean,
as far as improvements and stuff go, I mean, looking at it, there were a couple of actors that looks like their timing was a tad bit off.
The only thing I could say in the negative is a lot of people, their scare was they would just scream, and once or twice that's amusing, but when every person does it, it kind of gets old. I like to see a little bit more. I mean, they had great energy. I like to see a little bit more character development. Come up with like an act or a story.
Well, I thought
not just
it was,
like look at me and scream.
I mean, we go through some of the houses, and typically my girlfriend Rachel's with us, and a lot of times I'll hang back and kind of let her get in front of me, and I'll drop her name to a monster or something, and he'll run behind the scenes and go tell a couple of guys. So the upcoming scenes, they're using her name, they're right up in her face and stuff, and that to me, kind of personalize and adds a certain edge, if you will.
And I got to give him props. There was a couple of guys that got me because I'm like, I go through and I check out the scenery because I don't get scared anymore because I've been doing it so long. There's a few people that snuck up on me that I didn't catch them.
One of the very first guys that we came up to, actually, I think I was in front of you and like I saw him get behind you. Well, before I know it, the dude was literally right up in my face, and I look over and he's literally breathing in my ear, and I was just like, and he hits a wall or something. I was kind of jumped a little bit, and I was like, holy shit, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
Good setup.
Yeah, I can usually spot the boo hole, but yeah, there was a few times that, like I said, they got me that I didn't notice anybody there.
The boo hole.
Yeah, that's what we call the spots where you hide the haunted house.
Yeah,
the boo holes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you take that boo hole.
Jackass. All right, next up on our list is Paranoia in Canton.
Yeah,
all right, let's start with the first one, Toxicity. What's the good for it?
The good for it was...
We'll get the rating at the end, but what's the good?
The prop development, the scenery was good. Unfortunately, we had a couple of negative experiences leading up to that, which we'll go into more in detail. But, for me, it was really... about the prop setup. Yeah, some of it was a little bit too dark at times, but what were your thoughts?
Well, though, like I said, for the good, I mean, it was the actors that we saw.
It was priced reasonably well. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at $25 for two houses. So.
Yeah, the actors in it, they had some good energy and so. And like I said, the scenes in that house were well done. It's just so, but if we, the bad, I would say, was in that house particularly, there was a lot of empty space. You'd walk down just a blank hallway and with no one jumping out at you, and then you would get to a scene that sometimes was a little dark. But yeah, there was seemed like a lot of empty space in that particular house. It may have been the night we went, because we kind of went
been that.
Late
I'm also
in the,
wondering
in the
too. I'm not a teenage driver. I don't have to worry about curfews and things. So I wonder if
had a lot
of
young employees that may have had to
potentially,
go home.
You know, I think the state of Georgia has some type of curfew that if you're under the age of 18, you can't be on the roads after midnight or something. So, I mean, it was 10 o'clock before we got to the house. I think they open right at dark, which was probably 7:30, 8 o'clock. So
yeah, we were some of the last groups going through. So they. Like I said, they may have had some people
for that
some
house
crash
particularly.
Out.
That was kind of the a buzzkill was waiting in line. One, you're kind of cramped the way they have you. I mean, you almost felt like you were in a freaking cattle slaughterhouse or something. But well, I mean,
I kind of enjoyed the line because I kept screwing with the people in front of us.
Well, and that was cool because you know,
there was like holes in the line, like, you know, wrapped around itself. But there was like a wall between us, and there was a few holes in the wall. And I get bored. I stick my head through the wall and scare the people in front of us in line.
Yeah, I mean, you're able to keep your, you know, self kind of entertained that way. You know, but I would say what, there was probably 25 people in front of us, if that.
I don't know. It seemed like a pretty long line. Or it might have been that long, but it took a while to get through that
line.
Yeah,
you know, and it seemed like there were, I understand separating groups and everything else, but I mean, there were 10, 15-minute time blocks where nothing was happening.
I mean,
so
last
I wonder
if
there were technical difficulties or...
Might have been. And last year there was, in the line, they had like a movie thing set up. So we were like watching
House of a Thousand Corpses
while we're waiting in line. So yeah, they didn't have that this year. I would have liked to have seen something like that.
And I will say that, you know, compared this year to last, as far as the actors, and it was overall a much more developed haunted house than what it seemed
like.
This
is their first year in that location too, so you know, it's definitely an adjusting period. I wouldn't write them off. Let's move on to the better of the two houses.
I mean, I'm
going to
say
the Forgotten.
The Forgotten, you know, the prop design on that one was awesome. I mean, you walk in and I mean, it's like you're about to step foot into somebody's, like, you know, I guess to compare it to something would, like your old voodoo Louisiana, you know, haunt on the bayou style.
Yeah,
house.
There's like, you know, jungle with like, you know, dripping rain and stuff in it. It was, I really liked the Forgotten. There was not really any like empty spaces like there was in the other.
It was much better staff. The only thing
even if there weren't actors, there was something to look at. There was a lot more, which I think that's their main show is the Forgotten. So. Yeah, it was, you know, a lot better visually. Like I said, I really don't have a lot of bad to say on that house.
I mean, the only thing was it seemed like the staff was a little bit disorganized as far as the ticket taking. You know, they give you two sets of tickets, and, you know, we went through the first house. We get to the second. Well, the lady's like, hey, we need, you know, this ticket. Well, that's what the first house took. And, you know, she was like, well, I'll kind of let it slide this time, which, you know, kind of seemed a little bit standoffish. And, you know, it's just like, you know, just almost put a bad taste in my mouth.
Again,
once I got into the house and everything, that all dissipated.
Yeah, again, like I said, that was the end of the night, too. So I can understand, like I said, they've been going hard and heavy for a few hours that, you know, stuff happens. You get tired toward the end of the night. But the actors that we encountered in that house were, you know, they were good.
I will say, I'm not going to ruin it for the folks, but once you come out of that house, the ending part was awesome. I've never been to a haunted house that did that. So
you get a bus ride.
Oh, you ruined it, you ass.
I didn't tell him what, you know, where the bus takes you, but there's a bus ride.
I mean, just think back to some of the earlier Freddy Krueger movies. There's your bus ride, folks.
Oh, yeah, and they were playing dubstep. I mean, it had a good soundtrack,
too. Yeah, they did. You know, once you came out of the houses and stuff like that, you know, there was good soundtracks. You know, that's almost a recurring thing in a couple of the houses that we went to, which we'll touch on here later, but...
all right, so what's your...
My official rating...
For toxicity, because we didn't
give our... Toxicity, maybe I'm just being a hard ass. I'm going to say 2 severed heads on that one.
I might give it 2.5. Like I said, I give it extra points just because like I said, we may have come at a bad time.
And, you know, you as a actor in a haunted house and everything, you've got a much better appreciation as to what it takes and everything.
The actors in that house were good. There just wasn't enough of them for my taste. There was just a lot of empty space. But Forgotten, I give that one a 3.5 severed heads.
I mean,
I liked it a lot better.
I'm going to say 3.75. You know, I mean,
that's like most of a severed head. It's missing an eye and an ear, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the last one on our list, which was we literally just got back from this haunted house as we were recording this.
Yeah, we showed up at the house, we pour our beer and our cigars, and instantly jump into the recording. So that's how dedicated we are, folks. No, and I got to get up in, you know, 3 or 4 hours to be at work and everything. But you know what? The fans come first. Sleep later.
And that would be
House on Horror Hill.
the old school haunt. I mean, 33 years in Atlanta.
Isn't it one of, if not the oldest, isn't one of the oldest haunts in?
It may be the oldest. I remember going to this haunted house when I was like a little kid, and it scared me.
You know, I got a family member that actually heads, you know, the house every year.
And the man has an epic beard. I mean,
I can only aspire that in my adult life I can get such an epic beard.
I mean, I was like, that was not a character. That's a real beard, and I was quite impressed. That definitely goes on the good list for the haunted house. For me, the good list is they do something that you don't see in haunted houses anymore, which is a theatrical experience, where it's not just a free-flowing walkthrough. You go from room to room, and there's a little scene that they perform.
Yeah, I mean, you get a guide, knocks on the door 3 times, you go in. They slam all the doors and, you know, hey, everybody's all in and
lights come on. You see like a scene, you know, like I don't know how long the scenes last. I wasn't paying attention.
I'd probably say you know, a minute or so.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool. And like I said, it's definitely a low budget, you know, homemade haunt nearly. But like I said, I like the theatrical experience. You don't see that anymore.
It brings something raw. And, you know, one of the cool things about this one is after the scene, you get a badass soundtrack for every scene.
Yes, every scene
and,
had like,
you know, literally
had a pretty cool,
you know,
soundtrack. When shit gets wild, they start dropping some, like, you know, some metal, some dubstep, some.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the few houses I've been through that, you know, is playing some pretty badass Slayer, some Rob Zombie.
Yeah,
and dude, that is just right up the metalhead's alley here.
Oh yeah, and it, like I said, each scene is different. They had a variety of scenes. You know, there's old school,
You see, you know, almost the Freddy Krueger gets sucked into the couch type thing.
Yeah, you get the more modern, like, you know,
freaking Contagion or Quarantine.
Yeah,
you know, the zombie experience and,
you know, House of Thousand of Corpses type stuff. I mean, every scene.
Devil's Rejects, bro, get it right.
Whatever.
Jeez.
Same thing. But yeah, it, like I said, I like the theatrical take, because I said that used to be the standard, and you don't really see that anymore, because it's hard to do with some of your bigger haunts, because it just
the amount of people. This is one that, you know, tonight was the opening night. It's a Thursday. You go to this house on a Saturday or something, it's in a prime area, so, you know, be prepared to wait. I know last year we went on a Saturday, and they actually had rented some game trucks, so you could do some console gaming and stuff that they had parked out front, and, you know, they had people, you know, roaming around all throughout the house that you were like, hey, is this person standing in line with me, or is it an actor? So
yeah, and this is like, you know, like I said, opening night, so they, you know, later on in the season, once they get there, their, you know, acts dialed in, and it's more, you know, rehearsed. And it's, like I said,
I
may have to go back and see it again later on in the season.
You know, be sure to check them out online too. You know, one of the things we did is print off one of the flyers. I think it gives you, you know, $2 or $3 off. And, you know, for $10, very reasonably priced for the show. You know, just the actor energy, the setups, and the badass soundtrack, dude. I mean,
all right. So if you had to, you know, equal opportunity, give a negative, any, you know,
I mean, the only thing I can see is, you know, a couple of the instances, you know, after the scene, the strobe lights kick on, and the actors, you know, there's kind of a railing thing in front of you, and they get up in your face and everything. There were a few of those that seemed like they were mistimed.
Yeah,
or,
like I said, the lead up to the scare was awesome, but then the scare fell flat on a couple for me.
Yeah,
but that, like I said, that's the also goes to the fact that it's opening night.
You know, Wendell, the guy that heads the house and everything, he was actually part of our group, and, you know, I think he picked up on that, because there were a few times where we'd come out of a scene and he would go back into the previous scene, and you could kind of hear him coaching a little bit as to what was going on.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, the rough edges that we saw tonight are going to be smoothed out as the season goes along. So I would definitely like to see him again later in the season after they've had some more practice. So yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of negative to say about that. Like I said, it's just a nostalgia thing. I mean, it's old school. It's definitely old school. Hell, I give that one, you know, 4 severed heads.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 4 severed heads as well. I was talking about going online to print off the voucher for the $2 off. You can visit them at GA House on horrorhill.com if you're interested, or, you know, just show up, pay the $12, and enjoy yourself.
And that pretty much brings us to the end of this week's episode. Any final thoughts or shout-outs you got there, Brad?
I mean, I just want to give a shout out to all the actors that pour their time, their energy, and everything else, the masterminds behind the creation of the house and the people forking over the budgets to keep folks like me entertained. I mean, October is the month that I probably look forward most throughout the year because to me, this is my Christmas.
Exactly. This is the only holiday I look forward to every year. I got a couple shout outs I want to give. This show should be up before the 18th of October. And there is a big zombie walk in Marietta that I got invited to that I'd like to give a shout out to. It's the Marietta zombie walk. You can Google that, look it up on Facebook or whatever. But it's a charity thing. Everybody comes out, you dress up as zombies. It runs from 5 o'clock to 11 o'clock.
And they take both cash donations and food donations.
Yeah,
right?
You can donate food or cash. I believe last year they filled like 15 barrels worth of food and got $2,000 to donate to. Help people out. And
that's awesome.
You can do your own makeup show and up in your own costume. But another thing they do, if you go to their website, they have actual makeup artists, and you can like pay, I think it's like $15, $16, and you'll show up at a certain time and they will make you up as a zombie.
Yeah, and I looked
at
a couple of the, there were some folks posting about it on Facebook, and I looked up a couple of the artistic, makeovers, and dude, they were top notch. I mean, these people were doing in seconds.
Yeah,
what I would look at and say, "Holy crap, that must have taken you hours."
Yeah, and like I said, all the money goes to charity, so it's a good cause. I definitely want to you should go support that if you can. Want to give a shout out to we're working on getting some shirts made for us so we can when we go out into the bout we can represent the podcast. And want to give a shout out to Real Men Smoke Cigars for setting that up for us. Also, we got our first. Email from a listener this week, so I want to give a shout out to Hutch and say thanks for listening to the show and
thanks, buddy.
And all we'll please continue to
hang out
to
at the shop and everything else.
Let us know what's
down,
good.
We'll buy you a cigar, have a beer with us, or better yet, come on an episode.
Yeah, and like I said, you can always write us at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Yell at us on Twitter at cigarnerdpod, and check out our website cigarnerdpodcast.com. And with that, I say, may the force be with you.
Whoa. Death Star. And no nillions.
No nillions.
I'm going to leave it at that because that's an epic number.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.